Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
One of the things that really struck me when I was watching your film again was, it seems like everybody in your family feels partly to blame. Almost no one in my family feels that they're to blame. And I feel like that's like this other side to trauma that we don't really talk about exactly. That the victims of the trauma are further traumatized over and over and over again with guilt and shame and a sense of responsibility. And somehow the perpetrators don't seem to have anything like that.
Welcome to the True False Podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In this episode, we're going to bring you one of our favorite field sessions from True False 2017. Field sessions are our reinvention of the film festival panel. Rather than a long table with several voices and not quite enough time, we ask two True False filmmakers, whose work we believe has something in common, to sit down and talk to one another at length. We called this field session Blood is Thicker Than Water, though our filmmakers debate the truth in this adage. This conversation features Yancey Ford of the film Strong Island and Travis Wilkerson with the film theater hybrid Did You Wonder Who Fired the Gun? Strong Island mines the filmmaker's intense personal history of growing up on Long Island in the 1980s and 90s. The film examines how the killing of Ford's brother sent shockwaves through their family and how the enduring grief of loss continues to impact their bodies and their lives. Wilkerson's Did You Wonder Who Fired the Gun? Is a multimedia performance that interrogates his family's racist, violent history. Wilkerson's grandfather shot and killed a black man in 1946 in Dothan, Alabama, but never faced charges. His piece is not a traditional film. Wilkerson comes out on stage, sits down at a small desk, and narrates live this multimedia project. The first voice you'll hear is Yancey.
Where do we start? Gosh, it's tiring.
I know what I'm thinking. I watched your movie again today. I mentioned this.
Yeah.
And it was a hard viewing for me. I mean, I think it's an extraordinary film. I mean, I can't even articulate how much I admire it, but it was especially hard for me. And there were just certain things in it that were hitting me harder than normal, maybe because I just performed last night, I don't know. And so a couple of that I wanted to ask, which I don't mean to jump in too seriously right away, but at the very end, when you're sort of appropriating a kind of imagined voice of your brother, and you specifically mention the idea that in a way, the whole family was killed. And that just really, really affected me and really, I found really powerful because it's the thing that I've been the most terrified of about the piece that I've been working on, that that my family somehow killed another family. I don't know, just something I thought about when I was watching it.
Yeah, that moment actually was an imagined, because I didn't have access to, you know, autopsy photos or the grand jury minutes or any of the actual meat of the investigation. And because I had never had a chance, I didn't have a chance to experience my brother's loss with my parents and my sister. I found out about it 12 hours later, and essentially it took me 24 hours to get home. And that moment when I'm lying on the ground at the garage where he was killed, and sort of performing what I imagine were his final moments, I sort of go into this conversation with him. And it came, you know, directly out of a lot of writing that I did throughout the process. And including the edit, and it just you know, I try to articulate both the things that I thought he would be realizing based on the nature of the wound. And, you know, some people think that I'm trying to speak as him and don't realize that I'm actually speaking to him. And it was important for me, I think, to have that at the end of the film, because I do so much learning about him through his journals and the whole crazy, you know, starvation diet he went on in an attempt to get a good job. And it was just one of those things that just sort of, it didn't come out of nowhere, but it came out of a very deep longing for a conversation I never got to have with him. I think it's one of the most powerful moments in the film. It certainly is for me. When I hear the sort of the sound design deliberately drop out from underneath my voice, and you know, when I say there may only be the ground, for me that's the moment when I know the film is over. And I can't imagine being where you are and asking the questions that you're asking of your own family and wrestling with the not knowing what happened to the families of the men who died in your piece. And I saw it last night, and I was both sort of just engrossed in it and scribbling notes furiously, because there were so many things, like literally like words, like actual phrases and things that were almost identical at some point or another in my thought process or material that had been in the film and then had to come out of the film. But what also struck me was how similar the process of asking and then asking again that we've both been through. And I wonder how, you know, in addition to thinking about the families on the other sides of these murders, I wonder about your own family and the destruction that may or may not have happened there as well.
It's funny, the panel topic, or the discussion topic that it starts with, the name of it is something I've been thinking about a lot, because, you know, it's an assumption that, and our two pieces are really exploring the same notion in a way, and I've really come to be very skeptical of family.
Mm-hmm.
I recently watched again this film called The Emperor's Naked Army Marches On by Harukawa, and at the very beginning of the film, the central figure is presiding over a wedding, and then he denounces marriage as an institution while he's presiding over the wedding. And it's something that he's like this all the time, of course. He's a kind of strange antisocial figure, but also in a weird way kind of heroic. And he specifically says, well, family is the same as nations, and nationalism is wrong and it keeps people apart, and families are walls to keep people apart too. And I wrestled with that when I heard that. I kept thinking about that, and I thought, what is family? And why do we define it the way that we do? And is blood thicker than water? Is my Aunt Jean a part of my family? Or were we just coincidentally born into the same unit? And somehow I just increasingly think he's right in that we need to define family for ourselves. And what should be our family are the people that nurture us and support us and affirm us and help us, challenge us when we need to be challenged. But just because we share genes doesn't necessarily mean we're, you know, I've been wrestling with that question a lot. And so in the context of the piece, I thought about it a lot too. My mom is really haunted because her big sister was really important to her at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's really, really ashamed. So I said to her finally, well, why do you have to regard her as your sister? You should be able to choose who your sister is. I don't know, I just thought about it. But then I also thought about your family when I was watching the film again, and I kept thinking about that sort of from the opposite point of view. There's that moment when your mom mom's talking about needing to be comforted by your father. And that's a powerful moment in the film. And that's, I guess, that's when family has this power and this force and this need.
It's funny. William, Lauren, and I were really close growing up. And you know, I talk about this mandate in the film from my parents to love one another no matter what. And I think it's because the two of them both had very fraught relationships with their own siblings. And they did not want, that history repeated by their own children.
Right.
Outside of the three of us, I have had a similar experience. My family right now, after my mom's passing 5 years ago, and it's still incredible to me that she's been gone for 5 years, my family is my sister, myself, my partner, and then the people who we've brought into our lives over the years, who do sustain us and support us, and who are not blood relations. I don't have a relationship with my extended family. It's partly because I think of this notion of obligation, and partly because of this sort of relocation to New York and all the caretaking that my parents did of other people's kids, trying to straighten them out, and then, at a certain point, sort of drawing a line and saying, if you can't get your kid under control, it's your problem. I think that family is, and the construction of family is it's like this puzzle, because if you're good at it, it can be the thing that carries you, right? And if you're bad at it, it can be the thing that brings you down.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I was thinking, you mentioned your mom and her sister. There's so much shame involved in both of our stories, they're not necessarily placed in the right, they're not necessarily laid at the feet of the right people, and I wonder how, I know that the, shame is what kept my family in silence for many years. The shame of someone in your family being murdered and that person saying, you did it in self-defense and then never being, taken to trial. That's a shame that people and stigma that people live with for, for their entire lives. But I also can't imagine the other side of it. And last night during your piece when you revealed to us that there had actually been two murders.
At least.
I was immediately like, what on earth? I asked myself, what on earth? What else, does Travis's family know?
Yeah.
Like, what other silences are there?
Yeah.
How many bodies are there?
Yeah.
Really, and it made me think of that moment in Strong Island where I said, dredge the river and you will find him, or someone who could have been him, which was a direct, connection to those kinds of anonymous murders that your piece is so eloquently, it's difficult for me to find the right adjective. It's almost like there isn't an adjective yet for your piece. But it's the thing that the South is about, right? It's for me, the South is about disappearance. I just wonder how that all sort of gets expressed in this search of yours.
It's a lot to unpack. I guess I'll come at it in sort of a roundabout way. One of the things that really struck me when I was watching your film again was that it seems like everybody in your family feels partly to blame. And I feel like almost no one in my family feels that they're to blame. And I feel like that's like this other side to trauma that we don't really talk about exactly. That the victims of the trauma are further traumatized over and over and over again with guilt and shame and a sense of responsibility. And somehow the perpetrators don't seem to have anything like that. Like, I mean, until we started digging into this, the family just moved on.
This is the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. Let's get back to the conversation between filmmakers Yancey Ford and Travis Wilkerson.
But then I start thinking about these other questions, because we now know increasingly that trauma is handed down, whether it's through culture or genes even. I mean, there's all kinds of research around this question. So then I start asking myself, well, is perpetration also handed down? Is it handed down some important way? So is that in me? And that's been something I have been, I've skirted around, and I don't know how to get at. I don't know, how is he alive in me? That horrible person who was a rapist and a murderer. And I mean, the piece is already so long, there's so many things left out of it, but I mean, there's all kinds of little stories. He used to pretend to be a doctor, and he had a little medical kit, and he would disappear into the country, and no one knows what he was doing. Right? So he was a sadistic nightmare for this whole community. And how does that affect me? Like, is it in me? I don't know. And then I think about moments when I can't control my temper, or when I do the wrong thing, or actually, ironically, sometimes I'll have those moments when I'm being political, when I'm on the streets and I'm doing something that I think is righteous, but I'll see an image of myself. Like in the piece, there's a brief image of me at the Trayvon Martin after the Zimmerman verdict stuff, and I look at my face and I see that, I see a little bit of that monster in me, and that I find very unsettling. I don't know.
Wow, that's it. I've never thought about on a familial genetic level whether or not perpetration can be passed down. I've always thought about it as a cultural thing.
Yeah.
I've never thought about it as a you know, like grandfather to father to son,
right,
inheritance type of thing. And like, what do we inherit? And you're right. There is this sort of, you know, when civil institutions fail, right? And civil institutions, like my parents, they grew up in the Jim Crow South. My mother had to, both my parents had to take poll tests in order to vote.
Yeah.
You know, my mother talks about you know, the sort of everyday violence of being black in Charleston. There is so much trauma, I think, in the African-American community because of the lack of restitution, that some, on some level, and I don't mean that, you know, black people or that my family blame themselves, but there is this moment when you say to yourself, It's got to, it can't be everywhere, right? It can't be everywhere, because otherwise I would go out and, you know, and I might hurt someone because of this omnipresent threat that I still haven't identified and I've never seen, and that I have this urge to both strike out against, but also that would feel like a betrayal of the person that my parents tried to raise all of us to be. And so, you know, being caught in between those two places, right? The person who I think of myself as, and the urge for some sort of retribution, not wanting to betray my parents and their ideals, and not wanting to think of myself as someone who's capable of violence. The only thing is that remains is shame. And shame is a really powerful, really destructive force. And I think that when I talk about my father imploding when I got home that evening, you know, I think that my brother's death killed both of my parents. It took 4 years to kill my father. It took 20 to kill my mother. But I think it was the same thing. It was the power of shame and what it actually does to the body. It's just like there's so much of you know, the details of my brother's body in the film, because I think that one of the things that people don't talk about is how it is a corporeal experience, right? When you are shot, but these things get into you. And you know, I in some of my intense and silent moments in the middle of the night, I wonder about what my shame and my judgment of my 19-year-old self and my 20-year-old self and my 21-year-old self. I wonder what that's doing to me, right? And it's like, am I gonna have, you know, a brain hemorrhage, you know, a week after I'm trimming the hedges, or, you know, spent, you know, a great day hiking and then just all of a sudden have a headache and wake up in the ICU and be dead 20 days later. It's hard to know. It's hard to know how to be in your own body when it's informed by all of these things.
Yancey Ford's Strong Island won the Special Jury Award for Storytelling at Sundance in 2017. It played at Full Frame Documentary Film Festival, Hot Docs, and recently Ford won the Guggenheim Emerging Artist Award. You can see Strong Island in limited theatrical release and via Netflix this fall. Travis Wilkerson's Did You Wonder Who Fired the Gun was also featured at Sundance in 2017. Wilkerson's other work includes An Injury to One, Far From Afghanistan, and Machine Gun or Typewriter. We want to thank these filmmakers for their field session at True False this year. To check out more of the episodes of our podcast, subscribe and download on iTunes, or find us on kbia.org. This episode was produced by Danielle Hogarty and edited by Bram Sablesmith and Ryan Vemuliner. Our music was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of the True False Film Fest. Special thanks to Haley Godburn, Callie Luna, and Todd Chin. I'm Allison Kofeld. Thanks for listening.